Wisconsin Public Radio is a service of the Wisconsin Educational Communications Board and the University of Wisconsin Extension, with additional financial support from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners through the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. Support also comes from Christine Bremer-Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer & Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer & Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-Law.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg. Welcome to a special edition of Route 51, a debate between the candidates for Wisconsin's 12th State Senate District, moderated by Ken Kroll of WXPR Independent Public Radio, Rhinelander. Incumbent Republican Tom Tiffany was first elected to the General Assembly in 2010 and then elected to the State Senate in 2012. He is the chair of the Committee on Sporting Heritage, Mining and Forestry, the vice chair of the Committee on Agriculture, Small Business and Tourism, and serves on the Joint Committee on Finance. Brian Van Stippen is a small business owner with a doctor's in law from the University of Arizona. He has worked for the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs and the Geneva Institute on Indigenous Peoples Law in Geneva, Switzerland. He's been endorsed by the Wisconsin AFL-CIO and by the Wisconsin League of Conservation Voters. Here's moderator Ken Kroll.
Joining me today is our media panel who will question the candidates. Stephanie Haynes from WJFW, Newswatch 12 TV and Rhinelander. Eileen Persick from the StarJournalNow.com in Rhinelander, Brian Jopek from the Lakeland Times, and Glenn Moberg from Wisconsin Public Radio's Wausau Bureau. Each candidate will be given a chance to respond to each question, and I'm going to allow some flexibility during short rebuttals. We will have the first question with Glenn Moberg.
Senator Tiffany, you helped guide a package of shoreland zoning changes through the legislature's budget writing committee, the most significant of which bars counties from regulating shorelands more restrictively than the state. A Lakeland Times editorial titled Local Control versus Local Liberty argues that county governments have gone too far in those zoning restrictions to the point that they infringe on the legitimate rights of homeowners. The editorial argues that county governments are simply administrative arms of the state. But Ed Miller of UW-Stevens Point, one of Wisconsin's top experts on small governments, notes that county governments have evolved and now exercise more power than they did decades ago. Why have an elected county government if you don't allow them to govern? And isn't the idea of government closest to the people an inherently conservative idea?
Yeah, let's talk about, first of all, why this came about, this shoreland zoning changes that we made in the last budget. It was all about maintenance and repair of a non-conforming structure. So a non-conforming structure, a structure that was built legally perhaps decades ago, and it is still legal today. And both the Department of Natural Resources and some county zoning departments were denying the people to be able to maintain and repair their homes. I just reject that. People should be able to maintain and repair their homes. I mean, I have a packet of information here, letters from people from Lincoln County who were denied the ability to be able to maintain and repair their homes, and I just don't believe that that should be the law here in Wisconsin. I believe we should be able to protect people's private property rights. Some people have been concerned about the process that we used, and I started in 2011 pulling the Shoreland Zoning Rule, NR-115. By 2014, we had rewritten that rule, and we thought we had an agreement with all parties at the table, Department of Natural Resources, other legislators, and county zoning administrators were there. I received a note in 2015 from a county zoning administrator saying, we believe that this is not an accurate interpretation by the Department of Natural Resources when they put out a model ordinance in early 2015. I sent that on to Legislative Council, and they agreed. They said this violates the agreement that we had struck in 2014. At that point, I had to find an alternative. There is a bill that was produced by two other legislators, and leadership agreed to put that in the budget. So we found an alternative to get results for my constituents here in northern Wisconsin and for the people of Wisconsin.
Brian?
And I do agree in some form of that the individuals that reside on the lake should be able to do some repairs to their property. Nobody wants to see a dilapidated boathouse. Nobody wants to see a dilapidated cottage. People want to invest in their properties in the Northwoods. So I do agree with some form of Senator Tiffany's shoreland zoning proposals. However, the concern to me lies in the fact that we now have the opportunity for many people to be able to subdivide their properties. And that's one of the things that I think that we're seeing in the region. As I was speaking to an individual that lives on a 33-acre lake, and they were concerned now that there was going to be 14 more homes that were going to be able to be provided on that lake because of development opportunities. And that's one of the things that I believe that individuals in the Northwoods strongly disagreed with, is the ability to add more properties to the shorelines, to the lakes in the area. And that's the concern that I hear from individuals when I'm knocking on doors, when I'm speaking to people in the community, and when I'm speaking to county supervisors. They want to have that ability to be able to put put some more stringent standards on there if the individuals within those communities agree to do that. And I believe that with the different types of lakes that we have in the Northwoods, that we should allow those Lake Association members to communicate with their county board supervisors to enforce more stringent standards if that's what those homeowners and that's what those individuals on those properties desire.
Okay. Any rebuttal, Tom?
Yeah, I would just say that I've encouraged people ever since this happened to travel with me sometime and hear from people who have run into these situations that's affected their property, that they could not maintain and repair what they had. I talked to a local surveyor about a month ago. He said he's actually seeing a number of combinations where people are buying out their neighbor's lot and they're actually adding to it. People can use the free enterprise system here to, if they don't want lots to be divided on their lake, buy them up. I mean, they have the ability to do it. The other thing I would add in regards to the local control issue, the Vilas County Board did not pass a resolution that would have said to us, please repeal this legislature. They did not pass it. In really the epicenter of the shoreland zoning issue, Vilas County, they did not pass it. Lincoln County turned it down 7-13. On the Forest County Zoning Committee, they refused to take the resolution up, telling us we should change what we're doing. So there's local governments that have been with us on this. And I'm going to say one final thing, if I may, Ken. There is a memo that came out at the end of this session from the Legislative Reference Bureau, nonpartisan, and it says as such, it is not true the legislature frequently intervenes in the activities of local governments. That was a quote from the Legislative Reference Bureau. They believe we've been very modest in how we go about doing our business in regards to the issue of local control.
Brian, one rebuttal.
Well, and again, when I'm meeting with county board supervisors and town supervisors, that's one of the big concerns that these individuals have, is that there's been 128 pieces of legislation that have been approved that have limited local control. And that's something that I think that we need to address. And you know, it's interesting to me, there is a quote that Governor Walker stated about a year and a half ago, that when you send power back to the local level, the level closest to the people is generally best. So it's interesting to me to have to, on my side of the ticket as a Democratic candidate, to be talking about an issue that I believe that the Republicans have had as a platform in their campaign for a long period of time. And I do believe strongly that the local people best know how to manage and maintain their communities.
Brian Jopek with from the Lakeland Times with the next question.
Okay. Switching gears here a little bit. Brian, do you believe the school funding formula is working as designed? And if not, how would you fix it?
I do not believe that the school funding formula is working. I do believe that we need to reexamine the school funding formula to ensure that the rural schools, especially here in the Northwoods, are getting the appropriate funding compared to some of the other more urban center schools. Now, the school funding formula is extremely complex, and it may take some time to analyze how we can get that done and accomplished. But there are examples that we have seen within the district and outside the district where more urban populated centers and school systems are generating more funding. And I believe that the taxpayer dollars that are coming out of the Northwoods should be returned to the Northwoods, and we are currently not seeing that. There was a statistic that was shown as $24.5 million was taken out of Senate District 12 and given to school systems outside of the district. And we know, especially up here in our area, being a rural area, having a lot of large school districts, that we need to ensure that that funding is coming back to within our district. So I don't believe that we necessarily need to raise taxes. I just need to believe that we have to have the appropriate amount of funding coming back to within the district that the taxpayers pay into the state government.
Tom?
Yeah, I would say in answer to your question, Brian, that the school funding formula is working the way it was developed, the way it was started. Now, is it the best thing that we can do? That's a very good question. The problem we have as northern legislators is when we go down to Madison, and this cuts across party lines, is that many legislators, Republican and Democrat, in the southern part of the state, with the high populations that they have down there, they're like, we're fine with the school funding formula. So we have a very difficult time putting together a coalition that can pass a bill that would reform the school funding formula. So here's what I've been focused on, and I have been for the last two sessions while I've been in the Senate, and that is to put more money into categorical aids. Because when money goes into the funding formula, we get penalized here in the north. So we've put more money into high-cost transportation aid and into sparsity aid so that our northern rural schools get more money. Also, we're putting in another $100 per student here across the state for this school year, 16-17. I made sure that in the finance process last year that that money went in as a categorical aid rather than going into the funding formula. That way, every kid here in northern Wisconsin has got $100 that's going to be coming to him for them, him or her, to be able to go to their school.
Brian, do you have a rebuttal?
The rural transportation is a major concern, especially up here in the Northwoods, with the largest, some of the largest school districts that we have in the state and in the country, as a matter of fact. And one of the concerns that I have is that the school system in Stevens Point was awarded a large chunk of change for their rural transportation simply for the fact that they did not have sidewalks in front of their school. And that left Rhinelander out of the loop. Rhinelander did not receive any transportation funds. So again, we need to be looking and examining where our state taxpayer dollars are going and why are they not coming back to within Senate District 12. And that's one of the things that I would like to look at and examine if I were to be the representative for Senate District 12.
Yeah, we're actually bringing more money back here via high-cost transportation aid and sparsity aid. In fact, in this budget, it is increased for our schools. We started the high-cost transportation aid categorical the previous budget, and now this budget, we put even more money into it. Another thing that we did in this budget, and Representative Chaya deserves a lot of thanks for that, is putting more money in for fabrication labs. And we're seeing our schools here in northern Wisconsin really take advantage of that. Under the leadership of Dr. Carling and Dr. Yar over in Three Lakes, they started the first fab lab here in northern Wisconsin, and it has really taken off. And we have other schools like Florence and Rhinelander right here that are taking advantage of those. So we've really tried to do some things that are a little bit outside of the funding formula to be able to get more resources to our schools here in the north.
Okay, next question is from Stephanie Haynes for Tom Tiffany.
On the issue of broadband, what steps do you have in mind to bring reliable internet access to parts of the Northwoods that may not have it?
Yeah, we've had some great success stories, and I think this is a key component to economic development here in northern Wisconsin for small businesses and others. We were just at a forum last week in Eagle River where the a local person said that his wife would not be able to keep her business open without having broadband, access to broadband, and that they have it. All of her sales are done online. So it's a key component. We started the Rural Broadband Initiative in the previous budget, $500,000. We tripled that in this budget up to $1.5 million. And the great thing about it is it requires a matching grant. So we're seeing local municipalities, private businesses, and others that are putting money into this. And we've leveraged that into about $5 million that's going into broadband. And we're getting a significant share of those broadband grants right here in the 12th Senate District. I'm just so excited to be able to see the success story that we've had in being able to get many of those grants. But it's a key element for economic development here. And this will be one of my priorities in the next session to continue to increase the money that goes into broadband financing.
Brian?
And I do agree. We need to fund broadband in the Northwoods. I just don't believe that there is enough funding currently. The current administration declined $23.5 million in federal funds to bring broadband services to rural public schools and rural public libraries. I feel that was a mistake. And now we're having to rely on our state government and our tax dollars to try to bring rural broadband to the Northwoods. And I had the opportunity in my lifetime to run a small business online. And I was a student going to school in Texas, and my business partner was working in Wisconsin, and we were able to establish an online business. I don't see those opportunities for entrepreneurship here in the Northwoods. And as Senator Tiffany just said, you know, there's current current businesses that are lacking broadband services to expand their markets. And we need to be able to allow those current business entities and the individuals that want to develop online businesses the opportunity to do so, because I do believe that's an economic driver for the Northwoods. We need to bring those services to the Northwoods much more quickly and much more efficiently. We need to ensure that we're funding those services. The $5 million with the $2 million grant match is not, I feel, efficient and enough funding. We look over across the border to Minnesota, where they're putting in $40 million to their rural broadband services. These are issues that the people that I speak with on a day-by-day basis, my neighbors in the Northwoods, say, we need to have broadband in the Northwoods. We need to get it here now. On both sides of the aisle, this has been talked about for the last 10 to 15 years. We need to be aggressive about bringing broadband to the Northwoods. We need to have action now, because it's going to be an economic driver for the area. And I would be an advocate to ensure that we have sufficient funding and sufficient services so that we're working with both private and public entities in order to bring those services to the Northwoods.
Any rebuttal, Tom?
Yeah, so we started the rural broadband program two budgets ago. I mean, we did that in the legislature, and we expanded it this past budget. My opponent refers to turning down the $23.5 million. There's a reason we turned that federal money down, because it came with too many strings attached. But we had three providers in the state that are taking the Connect America funds now at the federal level to the tune of about $95 million a year. You see some of those trenching equipment that we see in ditches all over here in northern Wisconsin. Much of that is going in for CenturyLink and for Frontier up here, where they're using those Connect America funds. And we're going to get over $500 million in Wisconsin over the next 6 years to expand broadband. The key for us now is to identify those gaps at the state level and make sure we eliminate as many gaps as possible as we go forward.
And Brian?
Well, I don't agree that there was too many strings attached. I believe that's our taxpayer dollars, again, that is leaving the Northwoods. That's federal funding that was provided to the state of Wisconsin that the taxpayers in the Northwoods and throughout the state of Wisconsin pay into the federal system. These are funds that we should be accepting.
Okay, next question goes to Brian Van Stippen from Eileen Persick.
Wisconsin, like other states, are dealing with a teacher shortage, especially in upper-level high school and math classes. High school math and science classes. Given that many school districts in the Northwoods are struggling financially, how do you propose increasing the number of college students entering the education field?
Well, Eileen, that's a very difficult question, and this is difficult. Senator Tiffany did mention Fab Labs, and while Fab Labs are fantastic, one of the problems that I continually see when I'm speaking to individuals in the district is that they just don't have the staff to operate those Fab Labs. The teachers aren't there, and if there is a teacher that's sophisticated and able to run a Fab Lab, they're getting headhunted by larger urban school districts and offered five-figure signing bonuses. Governor Walker once made a statement that teaching should be like the NFL. While the NFL has collective bargaining agreement, the teachers no longer have the ability to collectively bargain, but yet now we're starting to see salaries rise for many STEAM type of teachers with the science, technology, engineering, mathematics. And we're starting to see a lot of the teachers in the area leave the rural school system. I was down at the University of Wisconsin-Stevens Point speaking with the chancellor down there, and they were saying, we just don't have students entering into the teaching field because it's been so vilified. And that's something that I strongly believe that we should change. My cousin was a teacher here in the Phelps School District. Her and her husband were two teachers. They had not gotten a raise over 5 years, and so she decided to move on to a different business entity. She said, I no longer want to be a teacher. It's not worth my time and effort to take on all these issues, all these concerns, and have the stress. So that her and her husband ended up moving to Mishicot, and he ended up taking a higher salary to teach in the school system down there. And now the Northwoods and Phelps just lost two good young teachers that are no longer going to be in the area. This is a large problem that I see in the state of Wisconsin, with 2,800 teacher positions being vacant after this last school year, and we need to ensure that we're allowing students that are in college to enter in those programs and feeling good that they want to be a teacher. When I'm talking to the college kids right now, they're like, they have no interest in going into the teaching field because it's been so vilified in the state of Wisconsin, and I think that's something that we need to desperately change.
Whoever's doing the vilifying, that is not me. My wife and I have volunteered in our kids' schools regularly over the years from second through fourth grade. I was in every week reading to my kids' classes. Whoever's doing that, it's not me, because I have great respect for teachers, and they do a terrific job up here. We have a bigger, this is part of a bigger problem here in Wisconsin, and it's just a workforce shortage. Go to any employer at this point. They are having such a difficult time hiring people. And we've got the boom generation, a few of us represented here around the table, that so many of us are headed towards retirement. And so we're having a hard time filling those spaces that are going with those retirements. So it's a problem for our schools as much as it is for everybody else, and we have to find a way. Workforce development is our number one issue over the next decade. One thing that did not happen last budget that Representative Chaya introduced was to allow school boards more flexibility in hiring people who may not have that teacher's certificate but have the capability to be able to fill a particular course, perhaps an advanced science course, that we should give administration the flexibility to be able to hire those people if they think they're qualified to be able to teach those students. I hope that comes back next session, because we need to do everything we can to give employers more flexibility, not less, to be able to fill those positions that are open. And that's true of our schools also.
Brian, a rebuttal?
I find it hard to believe that we're going to be able to find advanced science teachers, mathematics teachers, engineering teachers off the street with that teacher certification. To me, that is not a solution for the issue. I think that's a negative on getting individuals enticed to enter into the teaching field, because if they don't have to have the teaching credentials, then what's the point of even going to school to be a teacher in the first place?
Yeah, if you look at how that was crafted in this past session, it did not allow an unlimited number of positions to be able to be filled without a teaching credential. It was specific things like an industrial arts, something like that, a shop class, things like that, that to allow them to be able to do that. But there are some people, I suspect, that may not have a teaching certificate, that have an advanced science degree, that may be a good teacher. Isn't this local control? Shouldn't we give a local school district the ability to be able to hire somebody like that? I believe we should.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to a debate between the candidates for the 12th State Senate District. We'll have more after this short break.
Support for WPR comes from Al Johnson Swedish Restaurant in Sister Bay, home of Swedish pancakes, goats grazing the sod roof, and Al's new Scandinavian Garden Bar, open daily. Information is at aljohnsons.com. Support also comes from attorneys Sturgill and Long, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and the Michigan Upper Peninsula. Information is at 888-613-0600.
You're listening to a candidate forum involving the candidates for the 12th State Senate seat, Republican Tom Tiffany and Democrat Brian Van Stippen. Our next question comes from Glenn Moberg to Tom Tiffany.
Last year, a number of research scientists were cut from the DNR. Senator Tiffany, you've been quite critical of the agency, or you were at that time, about how it managed the deer herd, bobcats, and other wildlife, and some of their priorities for research. At that time, Senator John Erpenbach, a Democrat, said, quote, "These cuts are as petty gets," adding that the scientists were targeted in part because Republicans didn't like their conclusions about climate change in Wisconsin. It's been more than a year. How is the DNR doing? How are they managing the deer herd? And has the agency or the environment been hurt by the elimination of those research scientists?
Our environment gets cleaner year after year. I mean, we really do a terrific job as a society in making sure. I mean, it's preeminent. Go into our kids' schools and see how much it is taught. I mean, people take great care with the environment, and we get cleaner. We get a cleaner environment year after year. As far as the research scientists, some of them were going off and doing projects that didn't fit within the discipline of the Department of Natural Resources. Now, anyone that left the Bureau of Science Services, they could get a job with the Department of Natural Resources, but it was important to get them within the discipline if they're working on fisheries, if they're dealing on air and water, whatever the issue may be. It's important that they work on them, because they messed up the deer herd in northern Wisconsin, and all you got to do is talk to hunters about that. I have been pushing on them for years to increase the bobcat permits. There are when you talk to people who have the trail cams out there, there's proof. There is such a burgeoning bobcat population that it shouldn't take 17 years, as it has, to get a permit. And so some of those things were as a result of their work. It was time to get them within the discipline of the rest of the agency.
Brian?
Senator Tiffany originally ran on decimating the DNR. Recently, in one of his advertisements, he stated, "I've taken on the DNR and won." Now, I don't know what that necessarily means, but I don't believe that the decimation of our DNR and the removal of our scientists from the DNR have been beneficial for the Northwoods. The natural resources of the Northwoods are a vital element for our tourism industry. We need to ensure that we're protecting them at every level. So one of the things that I do believe that we need to look at is ensuring that scientific data is prevalent in our decisions that we're making for our natural resources in the Northwoods. And the elimination of those positions, I believe, was a detriment to not only the Northwoods, but the entire state of Wisconsin. And we need to ensure that we're fully staffing our DNR and making sound scientific decisions.
Any rebuttal, Tom?
Yes. The DNR continues to use science to make their decisions. Plus, the Department of Natural Resources Science Services is not the only entity that conducts scientific research here in Wisconsin. We have UW System, UW Stevens Point, which Brian is very familiar with. They do a lot of research there. And I would say, in regards to his comment, in regards to having accountability with the Department of Natural Resources, that's what it's about, is accountability. We returned $18 million as a result of a bill that I authored with Representative Mirsaw to our local units of government up here as a result of the managed forest law. I was hearing from town chairman that a culvert replacement in one instance, what should have been a $10,000 project, turned into a $50,000 project as a result of excessive engineering requirements that came from the Department of Natural Resources. We changed that now so that the state has to pay for that if they're going to require additional engineering requirements. These local units of government know how to change out culverts. We should not be overburdensome on them. So there are reforms that need to be done, and I'm proud of making the agency more accountable to the people of northern Wisconsin.
And I just find it interesting that Senator Tiffany has received a failing grade from the League of Conservation Voters and states, "I proudly wear that badge as as a badge of honor, and I have it hanging on my wall in my office." I don't believe that the policies and legislation that Senator Tiffany has been passing has been protective of the environment in the Northwoods, has not been beneficial for the environment of the Northwoods, and in fact has been a detriment to the environment in the Northwoods, and we need to reverse that trend and ensure that we're protecting our natural resources in the area.
Could I make one brief comment?
Very brief.
Very brief. League of Conservation Voters, a corporate environmental group, and yes, they do not share the interests of the people of the state of Wisconsin in advancing our economy.
May I make one statement?
Yes.
Neither does Gogebic Taconite, who wants to build the mine in our area. That does not a special interest group that has supported your campaign and that you have been voting for legislation to allow a mine to come into the area. So if we want to state which group is which, I would support that the League of Conservation Voters is at least trying to protect the environment where mining operations do not protect the natural resources in our area.
Okay, next question, Brian Jopek, goes to Brian Van Stippen.
A few weeks ago, there was a statewide meeting, and this is a transportation funding question, called Just Fix It. There were 71 meetings statewide. In Oneida County at Hazelhurst, there were 13 towns represented there. And essentially what they came up with was they were going to send a letter to the legislature asking for a $5,000 a mile increase instead of the $2,290. Because what they were running into was under the 2017-2019 budget proposal, towns would be getting, I believe they said, $88 a mile, an $88 a mile increase. And these towns are facing, as everybody is, a lot of increase in spending on items. As far as this goes, do you support gas tax and indexing? And if not, how do we fund local roads and bridges? How do we get to this point? And also, if you do support gas tax increase or tax increase, how would you make sure we get our fair share?
So I do agree with a gas tax increase. I do also believe there has to be other options on the table. We need to ensure that we're looking at the indexing because that's been a major issue since 2006. It has not been increased. I also believe that we need to look at vehicle registration increases, and I do believe that we need to look at trailer registration. The state of Wisconsin is one of the few states within the nation that do not require your trailers to be registered. And I have four trailers, and I don't necessarily want to pay for that, but I do believe that that is an option that we should have on the table. Now, again, we look at our fair share. What is the amount of money that the people in the Northwoods are paying into the state for their taxes? And I don't believe that we're getting our fair share back into the area. So for tax increases, I do believe that we need to look at that for infrastructure, specifically for road funding. But as for many other elements of trying to ensure that if we are considering a tax increase, that if there is a tax increase, that that money has to be guaranteed to be coming back to the Northwoods. Now, I know there's been a lot of talk and a lot of areas passing wheel taxes, and I don't necessarily believe that we should be passing wheel tax. I don't feel that that is going to be a sufficient tool to support our local roads, because a lot of that funding goes to the counties, and the townships are the ones that have the majority control over the roads. So I believe that we need to look at different options, including a raising of the gas tax, including a registration free increase, including the indexing, and as well as including vehicle trailer registration fees.
Tom?
So I was not able to attend that meeting in Hazelhurst with Oneida County, but I attend local town unit meetings across the district regularly, and this is one of the number one issues that they bring up. I make a commitment if reelected, we're going to get more money for local roads here in rural Wisconsin. It needs to happen. There's been an enormous amount of money that has been put into the Marquette and Zoo interchanges down in Milwaukee. Important that that was done. They're hubs. It's a hub of commerce down there. But it's time to get more money for our local roads up here. And that will be one of my number one priorities in the next budget. I'd say a couple things. One thing that happened this over the last 2 years, which is really good news for constructing roads, is energy costs have dropped significantly. If you look at asphalt prices, they were like $58, $60 a ton a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. They're down in under the 40 mark now. I've seen quotes of $38 a ton. That's really making a big difference in being able to repair more road just with that drop in energy costs. We have to become more effective and efficient in constructing roads here in Wisconsin, though. I alluded to the culvert permitting initiative that I passed this past session. It's a small thing, but we need to do things like that to make sure that we're spending the taxpayers' dollar as effectively and efficiently possible. We need to do those things first before we look at a gas tax increase. And one initiative that I would like to see happen is design build. Some of our neighboring states do that, and they save as much as 5 to 10% on their road construction costs, especially on complex projects, by using design build. I think it's something that we should be looking at here in Wisconsin.
Brian?
So I do find it interesting that Senator Tiffany had earlier mentioned that we do have a balanced budget within the state of Wisconsin, but yet we have to borrow up to $500 million for road infrastructure. That is something that I don't consider to be a balanced budget. We need to ensure that we're paying for our road maintenance as well as our road construction on the front end, because I don't want my two-year-old daughter having to be paying for our roads now and our bridges now when she's going to be an adult. We keep kicking that can down the road. We've continually done it. Senator Tiffany has been in state legislature for 6 years now, and to me this is an election year campaign promise. Now roads are my number one priority. I feel that roads should have been a priority the entire time that Senator Tiffany was serving in the legislature, and that's where I do believe it is going to be a priority, and we need to address it now, because, again, I don't want my child to be paying for the roads that we're taking care of in this time frame.
Let me tell you how I've delivered that $18 million from the Managed Forest Law that was vetoed away from local units of government by the previous administration back in 2005. We return that $18 million to local towns now over the next 3 years. What's the principal part of a town's budget? Road repair and maintenance. they're going to be spending that $18 million on that. Now, that's a small part of the solution. There's much more that needs to be done. But I'm sure my opponent was critical of Governor Doyle when he took $1 billion out of the transportation fund a decade ago, which really set us up for serious problems. I voted two consecutive sessions for the constitutional amendment to protect the transportation fund. That was the first step in getting us to the place where we can have a sustainable transportation fund as we go forward.
Okay, next question, Stephanie for Tom Tiffany.
What specific steps can you take to bring more jobs and industry to the Northwoods, specifically for young people so they stay or for young people to move to the area?
Well, we covered one just a few minutes ago, and that's broadband. If we're going to have home-based businesses, if we're going to have old-line industries that are going to be able to continue to succeed, they need to have access to high-speed broadband, and we're doing that. All you have to do is look at the ditches of northern Wisconsin with all the trenching that's going on. There is more and more fiber that is being laid. You look at the latest round of broadband grants that were put out. Rhinelander, right around Rhinelander, received a significant share of that. So I think it really starts there. The other thing that we've done that we did a few years ago that I think is really important is the manufacturing tax credit. Wisconsin has always been a manufacturing state, and that's where we've gotten so many of our middle-class jobs. We saw a lot of them leave in the Great Recession. We're trying to rebuild those, and we are hearing success stories. I've talked to mayors over in border communities. I've talked to entrepreneurs and people who have businesses up here. They say that manufacturing tax credit really allows them to either expand or some businesses to come here to Wisconsin by reducing their tax burden, and we're employing more people as a result of that. And so those are two things that I would mention that I think are important to have that job growth here in the north.
Brian?
Well, to address the agriculture and manufacturing tax credit, I don't believe that tax breaks to companies making $35 million more per year and providing tax benefits for individuals that are making $35 million a year and giving 11 people in the state of Wisconsin $21 million in tax break has been beneficial for the Northwoods nor for the state of Wisconsin. But as for creating jobs in the Northwoods, along with broadband, I do believe that we need to look at the infrastructure. It has been shown that looking at increasing your roads and bridges construction, increasing your schools and trying to build new schools will bring jobs to your area. We need to ensure that we're sufficiently funding not only our school systems but our roads. Those will in turn generate jobs in the Northwoods. Then that would then lead to allowing new business opportunities to enter into those communities. Well, I was knocking on doors here in Rhinelander a few weeks ago, and I was talking to some individuals that were actually doctors in the area, and they were stating that they were contemplating leaving the area because of the fact that the school systems and the roads and the infrastructure were not up to what they had expected when they moved here. So not only are they going to pull their children out of the school system, they're then going to now relocate to a larger urban area that has stronger schools, better infrastructure, and we're going to lose doctors in the area. So there's many concerns that we have of how do we create jobs in the Northwoods. I believe that looking at our infrastructure, looking at ensuring that we can bring safe roads, solid bridges, and increasing our governmental and our educational facilities is an important step in bringing jobs back into the Northwoods.
Tom?
Yeah, we've made the business climate better here in Wisconsin. I think we're going to see long-term benefits to that, to the manufacturing tax credit. Part of the reason PrintPak is here is because of that manufacturing tax credit. That was part of the package that they saw that said to them, we want to be in Wisconsin. They had two plants in the south, one up in Rhinelander. They were deciding where they were going to go a few years ago. When they saw what we were doing in Wisconsin, they said, you know what? They were just going to build one facility and just have one facility, not three. They built it right here in Rhinelander. And that's partly because of that manufacturing tax credit. That's a success story right here. As far as construction, I mean, Ken, weren't the walls shaking a little bit this summer with the work that was going on here in downtown Rhinelander?
Yeah, they were.
I mean, you look at the amount of infrastructure improvement that we've been doing in the 12th Senate District. Florence is under significant construction right now replacing their sewer and water. It's going on in Merrill. Rhinelander has done two projects now the last 2 years that are very significant in terms of replacing aging infrastructure, putting in new roads, new sidewalks, and all the rest. Good things happening. On top of that, we have the broadband that's going in up here, but we also have Wisconsin Public Service that is burying much of their power lines here in northern Wisconsin to make our electrical grid more reliable, so we don't have those outages like we saw this summer with the significant number of thunderstorms we've had. We're going to see much better reliability with our electrical grid also. So there's a lot of good things that are happening there. A lot of good things happening.
Brian?
There are good things happening. Like you said, you know, downtown Rhinelander has been expanded and there's many projects going on. However, I don't feel that that is the level of roads that we need to be focusing on and infrastructure we need to be looking at besides just the major urban centers in the area. We need to expand that. And it's difficult for me to be speaking to individuals, especially over in the Tomahawk area, that just lost their job at the Harley-Davidson plant to the tune of 37 jobs. And I don't know how somebody can sit there and say, we have a strong economy, we have a booming economy, when we're losing jobs in the Northwoods and losing good jobs in the Northwoods.
Okay, Eileen, next question for Brian Van Stippen.
Do you favor or oppose any changes being made to the state law that's related to state employees being able to employee negotiations for their salary or benefits?
Well, I would favor changes to allow state employees to negotiate their salaries and benefits. I think that's been a true value of the state of Wisconsin for a long period of time, and something that workers of the state of Wisconsin have now seen been taken away in some aspects. And I believe strongly that the rights of the working class, the rights of the middle class, have been diminished over the last 6 years, and that's something that I think that we need to reexamine. My family members were all middle class. Like I stated early on, I grew up on the family farm. When farming became unviable for my family members, they began working in the manufacturing and paper mills in the Fox Valley area. And those paper mills then started to go away, and those manufacturing jobs started to go away, and the rights of the workers started to go away. And we need to ensure that we're protecting the rights of the workers in every way, shape, or form that we can, and I would be an advocate for the rights of the working people of the state of Wisconsin.
Go ahead, Tom.
So, you know, this goes back to the Act 10 question, which is really the defining moment of the Walker administration. And we've seen savings to the taxpayers of $5 billion. These local government schools and others who were really headed for a crisis. I mean, remember, in a 2009-2010 budget, Governor Doyle did not put more money in state aid for schools. What he did was he lifted the property tax caps, and it ended up on the backs of the property taxpayers. We could not continue on the road that we were on. But taxpayers now have saved $5 billion. Many local governments have been able to balance their budgets as a result of that. And this was a significant change in law in Wisconsin. There's no doubt about it. But remember, we were just saying you need to pay up to 12% of your health care costs, and you need to pay half of your pension. And for most people in the private sector, that was really a modest change, and it was something that really had to be done. The other thing that I would say is that as a result of giving that flexibility, that local control, we're seeing, I heard from a local school district that said that they've been able to give a few teachers raises that they would have not been able to before and be able to retain those teachers. So those flexibilities have been really important also.
Brian?
And I believe, you know, what we see right now, what's going on specifically with the teachers, is that they're being headhunted. Teacher salaries are raising for certain segments of that teaching population, specifically in those STEM positions. And with Act 10, with this allowing those individuals to be able to collectively bargain, it allowed teachers to move throughout the state of Wisconsin, and that's what we're currently starting to see. We're beginning to see these teachers move for salary-based decisions rather than community-based decisions. Wherever I have been, I've always tried to be a member of the community, and I expect that when I move into a community that the teachers that are there are going to be there for a long period of time. And what we're starting to see is these individuals are moving because they're able to get a couple thousand dollars more in a different area. And I have no problem with them making those decisions. But we're not seeing consistency within our school systems. And that's one of the things that I believe we need to return, is to allow teachers to set down roots and remain in the area with sufficient pay rather than moving between position and position from school district to school district because they're able to get a signing bonus or to be able to make a few thousand dollars more per year, because that does not help our rural school districts. They're the ones that are suffering the most, and we need to make changes so that we can keep good teachers within our rural school systems.
Eileen, I kind of morphed that question. You asked about state employees, and we kind of ended up
right.
with more local, so
I
apologize for that. But specifically in regards to state employees, they still have the civil service protections. A law that was put in place, I believe it was in 1911, the early 1900s, it's been with us for over 100 years, those civil service protections are still in place for those state employees. So that's a really important safeguard for them.
We're closing in on the final couple of questions. We'll have Glenn, you have the next one, and that goes to Senator Tiffany.
All right, let's talk about rural health care. According to a report by Citizens Action of Wisconsin, Wisconsin's health insurance exchange premiums for single coverage will be on average 79 to 99% higher than premiums in Minnesota before tax credits are applied. Now, continuing to quote them, that's a difference of over $1,800 per year, and for some individuals in certain cities throughout Wisconsin, the percentages will be higher. First of all, are those statistics accurate? And if they are, why are things so much worse in Wisconsin than in Minnesota? And what can we do to ensure quality health care and retaining top quality physicians to serve our aging population here?
Yeah, I'd have to see the data to be able to speak specifically to the study. I haven't seen that. I will say this, comparing to Minnesota, Governor Dayton, a Democrat over in Minnesota, just said last week, it's time for Obamacare to go. He said, this is simply not working for the people of the state of Minnesota. And that is true across the country. Obamacare has been a disaster, and it's driving more people into Medicaid. We see the Medicaid populations continuing to grow, which is not a good thing, where people are having, they're losing their private pay insurance and ending up on Medicaid. So I think your question is, how can we do better? I think there's a couple things that we can do better with. I think we should incentivize more direct primary care, where you see local clinics being created, and you see this across the country, where people are paying like $40 or $50 a month to be able to get the fundamental care. If you have an earache, you have a cold, something like that, you can be able to get at least that basic care without having to go into an emergency room or whatever. The second thing is that, and we're seeing some advancement in this regard, is telemedicine, where doctors can see patients and be able to do it without having to be there, that they can see their vital signals and be able to make a diagnosis with doing that. Now, it's not perfect, not for everybody, but it's something that can work for some people. So that's a couple things that I think where we're headed is a one-size-fits-all system with Obamacare. And I think it's clearly being signaled with Obamacare failing. I believe we're seeing the death spiral. Some people are already talking about moving towards a single-payer system. That would be the worst thing that we could do. We need to have more innovation at the local level. These things will help make that happen.
Brian?
I don't necessarily agree that Obamacare has been a disaster. I do believe strongly that there has to be changes to the Affordable Care Act, because there have been some consequences that have been detrimental to the Northwoods, especially the 50-employee limit, ensuring that employers can't go above that limit without having to insure coverage. And that has been something that has stymied growth, I believe, in the Northwoods and has to be addressed. But again, we're going to go back to the denial of this current administration of $300 million in funding for health care. And I believe that that has been a detrimental impact on the people, not only in the Northwoods, but in the state of Wisconsin. Federal funds that were designated when the Affordable Care Act came about, and this current administration decided that they didn't want to take it because, as Senator Tiffany will state, there's been too many strings attached. And that coverage and that funding, what is again, our taxpayer dollars, the money that people of the state of Wisconsin have paid into the federal system that was declined to come back for the Northwoods. And we need to ensure that our state representatives are working hard to bring back our tax dollars to the Northwoods.
Well, our time is almost drawn to a close, so we're going to have closing statements here, and we're going to begin this time with Tom Tiffany.
Great. Well, I want to thank WXPR and the panelists for being here today. Thanks a lot for taking time out of your day. And I want to thank my opponent, Brian, for being here also and being able to have a good forum. Elections are about the future. And we're going to do good things this next session on a wide variety of issues that are really important to the people of the Northwoods. We're going to work very hard, as we have in the past, in putting more money in schools. We put $100 per student in categorical aid per student here in the 16-17 school year. We're going to try to do that again the next session. Broadband, we are going to continue to increase those broadband grants if possible, because it is about economic growth here in northern Wisconsin. We're going to put more money into rural transportation. That's already been signaled. We need to maintain and repair what we have before we expand some of the freeways here in Wisconsin. And the biggest issue we have before us is workforce development. We've been putting more money into technical schools and into improvement of our educational system, and we need to have people ready to be able to go to work because we have a real shortage. Finally, I will make sure that state government is accountable on behalf of the citizens of the Northwoods. It's been the number one thing that I've tried to do as a state senator, and I will continue to do that. I'm optimistic about the future of the state of Wisconsin, and I'm asking for your vote on November 8th.
And closing statement from Brian Van Stippen.
And I want to thank WXPR and all the panelists as well, and Senator Tiffany for making this a very cordial debate, a forum. We've seen so many vitriol in politics right now that it's nice to be able to talk about policy and the direction that we believe that the state of Wisconsin should move forward in. And in many aspects, Senator Tiffany and I do agree, but there's the core that there's might be a difference upon which Senator Tiffany and I disagree upon. And I am not a politician. I'm an individual that has grown up on a dairy farm, has had the opportunity to go to school, and now I want to come back and serve the community that I reside in. So I believe that the values, again, that my parents and grandparents taught me of common sense, hard work, and integrity are something that I can bring down to the state of Madison and be a representative for the people of the Northwoods and represent those values and their ideals, because I believe strongly that the people of the state of Wisconsin are looking for some balance in state legislature. And right now, there's just not a lot of balance, which does not allow for a lot of negotiation and a lot of mediation. And I believe that I can bring the true voice of the Northwoods to Madison.
Well, thanks to both the candidates here today, Tom Tiffany, Republican, Brian Van Stippen, Democrat. We also wish to thank Glenn Moberg from Wisconsin Public Radio in Wausau, Eileen Persick, editor of StarJournalNow.com, Stephanie Haynes from WJFW, Newswatch 12, and Brian Jopek of the Lakeland Times Northwoods River News. I'm your moderator, Ken Kroll. Thank you.
You've been listening to a special edition of Route 51, a debate between the candidates for Wisconsin's 12th-state Senate district. Next week, it's a combined candidates' debate for the 85th and 86th Assembly districts. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we're heading out of town.